So first off, this should give a sense of scale. Over the past two fiscal years, fiscal year 2018 and fiscal year 2019, the counties that comprise the Delaware Basin, in which the State Owns Relinquishment Act lands, contributed almost, or actually more than $750 million in royalty to the permanent university or permanent school fund. These revenue numbers don't exclusively include Relinquishment Act lands. They do include some state fee lands, but by and large, the vast majority of this is attributable to Relinquishment Act lands. And so, as you can imagine, the state of Texas is by far the largest royalty owner in the state, and Relinquishment Act lands are by far the largest single type of land owned by a single owner in the state. You can see over on the far left, Reeves County is particularly prevalent. I believe roughly half to a third of Reeves County is Relinquishment Act land. $500 million in royalty have come from that county alone over the past 2 years. So it's obviously something, understanding Relinquishment Act lands and how to operate on them, how to lease on them, how to pool, and how to develop in compliance with the rules and regulations that the state imposes are pretty critical for anybody who's got substantial operations on in the Delaware Basin, because there's really no getting around the fact that you're going to be on those lands at some point or another. Now, how we got here really is derived from where we started. Obviously, Texas came into the Union. Prior to that, they were a sovereign nation. Before that, they were part of Mexico, and before that, a part of Spain. And that Spanish and Mexican history influenced the way that state lands, sovereign lands, were handled initially. So initially, what we would see with the within the state were that while the sovereign would convey lands, they would only convey surface, and the state or the sovereign of Texas would reserve all minerals. The Constitution of 1866, the Texas State Constitution of 1866, resolved that and gave private individuals mineral ownership of the lands beneath the properties they currently owned, but it was not prospective in nature, and so that it only served to apply to prior grants of land. In 1876, we had another constitutional provision that was added, which set aside half of all public lands, that is, half of all lands that still remained in the sovereign, set those aside for the benefit of the public school fund. And so as the surface of those lands were sold to private owners, the state reserved those minerals. As time passed, we of course had Spindletop right at the turn of the century. The state realized that it wanted its minerals developed, its oil and gas minerals developed, and it was having difficulty with surface owners who were not very interested in allowing oil and gas operators to come onto their property and develop that oil and gas, because they didn't get any benefit from that. So the state legislature made a somewhat half-hearted effort to encourage that in 1913 with the Permit and Lease Act, which provided that the compensation to a surface owner for oil and gas operations on their land would be 10 cents per acre per year. That, even in 1913 dollars, was grossly insufficient, and surface owners fiercely resisted any oil and gas development on their property. So we come to the Relinquishment Act of 1919, the act's name from which Relinquishment Act lands are derived their namesake. Under the Relinquishment Act, let me step back. The Relinquishment Act was intended to robustly encourage development of these minerals. The language here quoted in the second inset bullet point is directly from the statute and from the act, and it fairly clearly states that it relinquishes and vests in the owner of the soil, that is the surface owner, an undivided 15/16 of all oil and gas in the subject properties. Now, whether the state by statute could give away minerals and lands that had been reserved under the Constitution for the school children of Texas, that is, for the permanent school fund, was challenged in the case of Green versus Robinson. It's a very Green versus Robinson. It may be one of the most significant cases that most, maybe some have heard of, but most have not heard of. It's a 1928 Texas Supreme Court case, which ultimately held that the language we just were referring to that talked about the owner of the soil receiving 15/16 of the minerals, what that actually meant was that the owner of the soil was actually going to be the agent for the state, and as such was entitled to one half of the bonus royalties and other benefits accruing from any oil and gas leases and development on those leases. The quote from the from Green versus Robinson is below, and it's still good law to this day. It is followed, and that is it hasn't been questioned of late. The now we get into the unique rights and responsibilities of the surface owner. Some basics: the owner of the soil under the Green versus Robinson case acts as the agent in negotiating and executing oil and gas leases. Owner of the soil is required to lease on the GLO's General Land Office. And of course, for most of you are aware, the General Land Office manages and administers state lands and state property on behalf of the state of Texas. So the owner of the soil has to lease on a GLO Relinquishment Act lease form, and they have a single form in place at any given time. The current form was enacted or promulgated in 2016. GLO previously, in years past, up until the past couple of years, allowed, while they would require you to use their form, they allowed liberal use of addenda with additional and modified terms to change the or add to the provisions of the lease.